It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. The pandemic has had a widespread impact in our region, from businesses being shut down to tens of thousands of people losing their jobs, to the critical illnesses and deaths in nursing homes. How has the pandemic further challenged our neighbors with disabilities? This week on The Confluence, we're reporting on the 30th anniversary of the Americans with Disabilities Act this coming Sunday. Nancy Murray is the Senior Vice President for ACHIVA and President of the Arc of Greater Pittsburgh. ACHIVA is a nonprofit that advocates for and empowers people with disabilities. Nancy, early on in the pandemic, what concerns were you hearing from people with disabilities and their families?
Well, in the beginning of the pandemic, there were two very important issues. One being who was going to be receiving medical care and medical equipment, such as ventilators. We were very successful in having the Office of Civil Rights announce that people with disabilities, people with chronic medical issues, were to be recipients of ventilators, and that they were not to be last in line. The other issue is visitation policies with hospitals. And this has also been resolved. Early in the pandemic, hospitals and healthcare settings were wanting to limit the number of visitors coming in. We understood that. However, someone who needs, you know, the emotional support, somebody who needs somebody that can communicate for them and advocate for them, they needed to have either a family member or a direct support professional.
All right. So a couple of victories, but are there still lingering concerns or not?
Yeah, there are. Many people with intellectual disabilities still are not out in the community. Many, you know, have difficulty wearing masks. Many are not yet back at their jobs because the place of employment maybe is not having employees come back yet. And for family members, the other issue that's still out there for us is that community residential providers, in many, many cases, are still prohibiting families from visiting, or they're putting up so many, you know, little rules and regulations that, you know, you're still visiting, but you're visiting through a door or a window.
What action can you take regarding this particular issue involving community homes?
Really none. It's still up to each provider. And I have to tell you, some have done a wonderful job in terms of putting precautions in place. So, for example, families need to wear masks when their person is home with them, be socially distant, make sure the person is washing their hands, using sanitizer. So many providers are allowing their families and family members to go home with one another, to visit, come back to the community home. And others are limiting those visits.
How concerned are you about the, I don't know, the emotional well-being of these individuals who rely on their family for support, for that connection?
Well, social isolation is something that we're very worried about. You know, there's Zoom calls. Those are helpful. Telephone calls. But not being able to go home with their family, really visit with them like they used to. Many of these folks are truly cognitively not able to understand why they can't visit with a family member. You know, as this goes on, the concerns for people having long-term behavioral health issues due to separation and social isolation, it's going to be there.
Mm-hmm. Has the pandemic's impact on people with disabilities shined a light on inequitable access in our region, do you think?
Yes. Very much so. There's been more and more emphasis on the services these folks need. Certainly the other focus is the role that our direct support professionals play. They are essential healthcare workers. They do come into our community homes every day to provide, you know, assistance with activities of daily living. And also for many people, they're providing hands-on healthcare. They are feeding people through feeding tubes. They're helping people with their breathing machines. They are providing essential health care services.
Finally, Nancy, as we approach the 30th anniversary of the Americans with Disabilities Act, in general, what can we do as government entities and maybe more importantly as individuals to help?
Well, you know, over the last 30 years, because of the Americans with Disabilities Act, people with all types of disabilities are now afforded opportunities that, frankly, you know, we hoped for 30 years ago, but it was almost hard to imagine. Young children with all types of disabilities are now in public schools, alongside children who do not have disabilities. People with disabilities are employed in companies and employment settings. People with disabilities are, you know, attending places of worship regularly. They're out in the community. The lives of people with disabilities in the United States is so much different than it was 30 years ago. But our work isn't finished. Pennsylvania still has 4 state institutions. We still have about 650 people with intellectual disabilities and autism who are living in institutions. They need to close. Those people deserve the opportunity to live in our communities just like people with disabilities are doing right now. And family caregivers, you know, still the majority of people with intellectual disabilities still live at home with their families, especially elderly family caregivers need more support. They need respite to be able to continue to provide care for their son or daughter, brother or sister. So we still have work to do.
Nancy Murray is the Senior Vice President for Achieva and President of the ARC of Greater Pittsburgh. Thanks, Nancy.
Thank you, Kevin.
Tomorrow on The Confluence, we continue our series on the 30th anniversary of the Americans with Disabilities Act. We speak with Paul O'Hanlon, co-chair of the City-County Task Force on Disabilities, about what our region needs to do to be more accessible. It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. Even though much of the economy has partially reopened, recent numbers show continuing job losses in the hospitality, arts, and restaurant industries compared to the same period last year. But economists are seeing a few surprises as some industries are weathering the pandemic better than others. Chris Bream is a regional economist at the University of Pittsburgh Center for Social and Urban Research. Chris, the job numbers pretty bleak. According to the State Department of Labor and Industry, there were about 200,000 fewer people employed in the Pittsburgh market in April than for the same period a year ago. During the early months of the pandemic, employment at full-service restaurants was down more than 80% compared to last year. Can an industry recover from that?
I think some industries are going to take a while to come back, and certainly sort of the full employment of the restaurant industry or where we were at before COVID, it'll be a while before we get back to those pre-COVID levels. And I think you're going to see a lot of small businesses closing because they have to. Possibly what I've seen, you know, some older establishments with older owners or older staff that they just have decided already not to come back. That it's just the risk is too much and they've just sort of retired earlier than they might have planned to. So there's a whole lot of dynamics going on.
One surprising stat from recent job numbers is that finance and insurance industries still employed about 1,600 more workers compared to the same period last year. Why is that?
I think this industry is fairly dominated by some large firms that clearly have sort of the background and the infrastructure to rapidly shift their workers into telework or working from home. And that's the story here, right? Some workers and some industries can adapt to this sort of new environment and others I clearly can't.
You and your colleagues also looked at the who as well. What did you learn about the demographics of who has been affected?
I mean, there's some huge differences, right? You know, certainly some disparities we know about. Certainly black workers, were put out of work more than white workers. Certainly women were impacted more than men. I think the starker differences that were a little surprising was how different it was by education. You know, folks who were in professional jobs requiring bachelor's or graduate degrees, over 70% shifted to telework here. What we studied was here in Allegheny County, but I think it applies to the region broadly. Less than 25% of workers with just a high school degree were able to do that. And that reflects sort of the nature of work, the nature of the industries that they're employed in. And also surprisingly, older workers were not able to shift to telework as rapidly as younger workers. And that's kind of a weird shift. Typically older workers were, in past recessions fared better than younger workers. Older workers didn't quite have those opportunities as younger workers.
Finally, do you think it's possible to even predict right now where different sectors of the economy will stand by the end of the year, how the trajectory of the pandemic will affect the economy as schools make plans for the fall?
So, I mean, again, these are unprecedented times, so all the normal sort of forecasting methods probably are thrown out, and I think the economic trends are clearly going to follow the public health trends. So, I mean, that's sort of the number one message. So I think consumer behavior is going to continue to be shifted, right? Even if things were safe all of a sudden, are we really going to be going to restaurants as much as we did before? Is the entertainment and the hospitality industry, business travel, those things all could have longer term impacts, even if we had sort of a great resolution to the public health crisis as it is. And I'm not sure we're there either. So the answer is, I don't know. And I think we're looking at all these things going forward.
Chris Bream is a regional economist at the University of Pittsburgh Center for Social and Urban Research. Thanks, Chris.
Thank you.
It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. Face masks help to prevent the spread of the coronavirus that has sickened more than 98,000 Pennsylvanians and killed nearly 7,000. Earlier this month, State Health Department Secretary Dr. Rachel Levine issued an order requiring people to wear masks in public places. But some workers at the U.S. Post Office in Chambersburg are refusing to wear them. WITF's Brett Schultes reports the state says it doesn't have any jurisdiction because post offices are federal entities.
Skyla Burrell recently went into the Chambersburg post office to mail a package for her 70-year-old mother. Burrell works hard to keep her mom safe while grappling with losing work due to the coronavirus. The longtime blues musician has had to cancel tours and gigs, and she wants to get back to work. But she says that can't happen until people get serious about stopping the spread of the virus. That's why Burrell was baffled to see the faces of the postal clerk and several customers because they weren't wearing masks.
Next to me, the customer, he wasn't wearing a mask and nothing was said to him. No one in the post office that was working there was wearing a mask.
Burrell says she asked the clerk if he's worried about getting sick or getting someone else sick.
He said, well, you could get hit by a bus when you walk out the door.
Burrell was shocked, and when she posted on Facebook about her experience, she was attacked by people who see masks as a sign of political affiliation rather than concern for health.
So it's really baffling why the simplest thing that can save us all is a political issue.
Postal Service spokesman Ray Diatolo says management at the Chambersburg facility is aware of the incident and has addressed it, but how it was addressed isn't clear. A visit to the Chambersburg post office shows some workers aren't wearing masks. Outside, a sign says masks are required for customers. Through the window, a line of people are inside, and they are wearing masks and standing on the markers that keep them socially distanced from one another. Inside, a postal worker wearing a mask is wrapping up a rural job fair when one of her colleagues comes from the back, and she's not wearing a mask.
I noticed that you work here as well, and you're not wearing a mask.
Right, I'm inside working.
Well, you're within about 2 feet of that gentleman right now. So I'm just trying to understand, you know, whether the mask policy is being enforced.
I'm a retired Navy SEAL. I can figure out.
I'm not going to make any comments.
And pretty quickly it becomes clear that, much like the people criticizing Skyla Burrell on Facebook, some people see face coverings as a political thing. One guy brings up Pennsylvania's gas tax, and then the guy who said he was a Navy SEAL, who is wearing a mask, comes over.
Gas tax in the country.
So you want to talk about how Governor Wolf's...
Excuse me. Let me finish. Yeah, I'd like to know where they're spending it. I think it's going to general revenue.
Waiting in line, a second door leads to the postal clerks, where there's a sign. Only two customers are allowed in at a time. From there, one clerk, a middle-aged white man, is not wearing a mask. He stands next to another employee, a woman, who is. But the man without the mask disappears into the back before I walk into the room.
Want to speak to a supervisor then?
Eventually, a supervisor comes out.
Here's the phone number. This is where you would need to address any media
questions to, okay?
I did speak to Ray this morning. I noticed that some people even here, even today,
are not
wearing masks, including a man who was working here.
I have no comments. You can discuss everything with Ray. Thank you very much.
But I noticed that employee
Thank
was not.
Thank you very much. You have a great day.
Thank you very much for your time.
For people who think masks are part of the culture wars, it turns out the post office may be the perfect battleground. That's because the state is not able to enforce its rules related to businesses and masks at post offices because they're federal entities, according to State Health Department spokesman Nate Wardle. Police could issue a warning or a citation to a postal worker who is out in public without a mask. But when it comes to the grounds of post offices, Wardle says they're under federal jurisdiction. Post office spokesman Ray Diatolo says the Postal Service is requiring its workers in Pennsylvania to wear masks as part of an effort to align its policies with state rules. But he acknowledges the post office technically doesn't have to follow the state rules, and he wouldn't comment on what could plainly be seen at Chambersburg. While people like Skyla Burrell would like to see the Commonwealth do a better job of enforcing its mask orders,
Pennsylvania's next governor!
At a recent motorcycle rally in Gettysburg, Republican State Senator Doug Mastriano of Greene Township sees things a bit differently. He says Democratic Governor Tom Wolf's rules are grounds for a rebellion, the likes of which haven't been seen since the Boston Tea Party of 1773.
Our brothers got on board that ship and dumped that tea into the Boston Harbor, right? What are we going to do with the mask? I'm really tempted to have a mask burning party. I got a box of them in my car. It might be this day.
Mastriano has been at the forefront of state Republican-led protests over masks and the statewide shutdown.
If you want to wear it, wear it. But don't tell me I got to wear it. It's not any of your business, right? So it's mind your business.
In a video posted on his Facebook page, Mastriano and the crowd are not wearing masks.
We need action because everything's at stake here. You know, the governor comes out and beats his chest. We've saved lives during this crisis. I'm like, what about the 4,000 dead elderly that resulted from your failed Secretary of Health's edicts of unleashing the plague in the elder homes?
Back at the parking lot of the post office in Chambersburg, customer Danette Wiles says she has a mother in a nursing home who she visits once a week in person. Through her KN95 mask, Wiles says when people don't wear masks, they're contributing to the spread of COVID-19 that ends up in those nursing homes.
You know, I have asked the employees before, you know, why they don't have to wear masks, and they said because they work for President Trump at the federal level and not at the state level for Governor Wolf.
Wiles says it's frustrating. Politicians and voters have made the global pandemic that has killed millions into part of election year politics.
I just pray a lot. You know, I don't know if this is nearing the end of the world. I don't know. I pray a lot.
When it comes down to it, she has a post office box and has to go inside. Then she's headed to the nursing home, where she'll don her mask and try to cheer up her mom. In Chambersburg, I'm Brett Schultes.
And for today, that is The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. Thanks to our team, Helen Wigger, Tom Hurley, Julia Zenkovich, Doug Schugertz, and Mary Lee Williams. I'm Kevin Gavin. Until next time, hope you have a good day of good news.